Set your course for the Huff
Takes Podcast.
Welcome back to Huff Takes. I'm Eric Geller.
I'm Grace Seegers.
And I'm Haley Bird-Wilt.
And in this episode, we're going to be talking about the dumbest Star Wars fan theories, or perhaps not the dumbest, but the zaniest Star Wars fan theories, because the world is pretty grim right now. And while we can't do much about that, we can try to add a little bit of light and humor into your day. So we thought we would bring an episode to you about the wildest, silliest theories that Star Wars fans have come up with. It's a pretty long list, but we winnowed it down. And folks, I think we have to start with the big kahuna of outrageous Star Wars theories, which is, of course, Darth Jar Jar, the idea that Jar Jar Binks was the Sith Lord controlling the fate of the Skywalker family, and indeed the entire saga. I have to admit that I was never one of those people who got super into this theory, but a couple of hours before we sat down to record this, Grace sent me a link to a Reddit post that collected all of the different strands of this theory. And seeing it all in one place, well, it didn't convince me, but it did remind me of how outrageous this theory is. let's get into this discussion with a couple of highlights from this Reddit article. These are a couple of the headlines from the posts that people submitted as evidence for Jar Jar being a Sith Lord. Number one, Obi-Wan sensed Jar Jar. When they crash land on, or when they sneak onto the Trade Federation ship and land on Naboo, Obi-Wan senses Jar Jar. Number two, Jar Jar breaks the hyperdrive, making them have to stop at Tatooine to pick up Anakin. There's several in here about Jar Jar mind controlling people. There's one in here that says other Gungans can't force jump like Jar Jar. One of my personal favorites, Dooku got his ship from Jar Jar. I highly recommend that folks search for that and read that. We got some Clone Wars love in here. There's one that's called Jar Jar Attempts to Shoot Down Ahsoka in Blue Shadow Virus episode. Jar Jar is confirmed seen frozen in carbonite on Kashyyyk during the Empire's days in The Force Unleashed. So somebody didn't get the memo that that was a non-canon Easter egg. And then this might be my favorite. Star Wars animators, this is a behind-the-scenes article from the time of The Phantom Menace. Star Wars animators talk about Jar Jar's subtle movement and smallest limb movements. And the words smallest limb movements are in italics, clearly as evidence for the previous claims about mind control and force jumps and all that stuff. This idea that you have to pay very close attention because they were really doing something subtle with the way his hands were moving. Grace, Darth Jar Jar, yes or no?
I'm actually a hard yes on it as of about 4 hours ago. I would not say that this is a theory I've thought a lot about. I read the original Darth Jar Jar Reddit post a million years ago and was like, yeah, that does kind of make sense. And I didn't really take it seriously, though, because it is ridiculous. But in preparation for this episode, I reread the original Reddit thread, got in a little bit of a rabbit hole, and there are definitely elements of it that are plausible. I mean, I don't think that I believe all of the things that are in the Darth Jar Jar Reddit holocron. It gets a little bit ridiculous. They go far. It's kind of the thing where you're like, how much time does this person have on their hands that they are willing to conduct this analysis of Star Wars Rebels from the perspective of, is Darth Jar Jar a thing? And that's not a diss. Nothing but love and respect for people who have that time on their hands and choose to use it in that way, because they are creating entertainment and thought-provoking ideas for the rest of us. But all this is to say that, yes, it's silly, but once you kind of think about it, there are elements of it that just kind of fit into place. And, you know, it's just fun.
What are some of those elements? I need you to stand up for this a little bit more. Okay. I need more.
Okay. All right. In defense of Darth Jar Jar. So something that I found rather convincing was the idea that maybe Jar Jar was supposed to be a villain of some kind. I don't know about full Darth Jar Jar, but there's this theory that in episodes 2 or 3, Jar Jar was going to be revealed as having darker motivations, and that he's kind of would have been an analog to Yoda in episode 5, where Yoda's introduced as this kind of silly, goofy guy, puppet for laughs, and then it's realized that he's this wise old Jedi master. So the idea is that Jar Jar introduced for laughs, and this kind of goofy, funky character. And then later it's going to be revealed that actually there's more to him than meets the eye. And that because George Lucas was not the most economical in his storytelling, that he would have introduced this concept in either episode 2 or 3. And then the theory goes that he saw the negative reaction to Jar Jar once Phantom Menace came out and kind of chickened out and no longer wanted to have this character that he was going to make into kind of a dark manipulator into that archetype. Instead, he was just like, well, fine, whatever, and turned him into the lame side character that we know and tolerate from episodes 2 and 3. So again, that's kind of a long-winded explanation, but at the very least, I can see some perhaps grain of truth to that, to maybe there may have been more to Jar Jar than comic relief. And after the negative reception his character received, that was kind of scuttled. I don't know about full Darth Jar Jar, but I can see that. That's plausible to me.
Haley, I gotta know where you stand on this.
I have believed Darth Jar Jar completely since the Reddit post six
okay.
years ago.
Okay, are you for real? Like, this is for real? For real?
No, I am serious. And I remember I was in high school. Not to give away the fact that I am a child, but I was sitting at lunch, and I remember me and my friends discussing this theory and watching the videos. And basically, this post has systematically shows different facets of Jar Jar's personality and his behavior that really do indicate that he is a trained Force user, including, first of all, just sheer physicality. He is a skilled warrior, and he sort of hides it by being goofy and being ridiculous. But if you watch the videos, he does ridiculously complex moves and things that really we only see Jedi doing or Sith doing. The other thing for me is you just like look at his behavior and his lines and the plot in The Phantom Menace and how he sort of just bumbles into this, you know, relationship with Qui-Gon. And I remember watching the clip of them, like there's always a bigger fish clip. I don't know if y'all watched that in preparation for this, but he's a Sith. Like, he is evil. He is manipulating the fish. It's a foreshadowing of what is going on or was supposed to go on in this trilogy. So I completely believe Darth Jar Jar. I do have to note that a representative for George Lucas at one point, I believe several years ago, said that the theory was categorically false. But we don't
but
take
that's
statements.
Exactly what they
that's
would
what
say.
That's what they would say. Yes. If it were true. So yeah, I 100% believe it.
Yeah, the post on Reddit that collects all these theories makes the point that, and the original post makes this point too, that what Jar Jar is actually doing with all his bumbling movements is an example of a form of martial arts called Drunken Fist, in which you try to catch your opponent off guard by acting like you are a bumbling, out of control, uncoordinated person, but actually you are controlling your body very precisely and using angles of arm movement and various forms of momentum to achieve your goals with perfect control the entire time. I gotta say though, if you like the post collects a bunch of GIFs of Jar Jar moving, and if you watch these clips, It is very hard for me to believe that this is Drunken Fist. I subscribe to the approach of the simplest explanation is probably the most correct one, and I think he's just a bumbling idiot. Like, I gotta say, as much as I enjoy this theory, I'm trying to look at it through an objective, critical lens, and too much of this evidence, this supposed evidence, is misinformed. You know, I mentioned that Force Unleashed, you know, Jar Jar and Carbonite. I think they're taking some of this stuff a little too seriously when they shouldn't be, and misreading the context for some of these supposed clues. And I wouldn't necessarily say that it has the most intellectual rigor to it.
Here's one that I also found compelling that is not just the way he moves. In The Phantom Menace, there are multiple instances in which Jar Jar is sort of instilling in Anakin disrespect for authority, where he's making fun of Qui-Gon behind his back, or at one point he tells young Anakin that Padme is hot or something like that, laying the groundwork for Anakin's undoing later. I don't think that's a coincidence. I think Jar Jar was up to no good, personally.
So you don't think Jar Jar was just being a bro to Anakin?
I don't think so. I don't think so. I mean, they were both children. That's creepy. I'd rather believe he was being creepy, but also for an evil reason, to end the Republic.
As opposed to just being creepy for a totally wholesome reason.
For a boring evil reason.
Yeah.
You want an exciting evil reason.
I think part of this is just a pathological need to rationalize the existence of Jar Jar Binks. People don't like the fact that a character was created and portrayed throughout this trilogy who almost always gets in the way and is kind of grating and insufferable. And I'm not actually a Jar Jar hater, right? Like, it's objectively true that most of the things that he does, at least if you take the surface level meaning, are clumsy and getting in the way. So I'm not a hater when I say that, but that's his role. His role is to be the comic relief and the guy who messes things up if you don't stop him. And of course, the ultimate example of that is giving Palpatine these powers. And I think people just, you know, I don't want to call you out, but I think people are just a little uncomfortable with the idea that that's all there is to it.
I think this is kind of addressed in the original Darth Jar Jar post about why Jar Jar makes us so uncomfortable. And part of it is just because he is so ridiculous physically, and then also in terms of what he is able to accomplish, and it just messes with the logic in our head that a character so ridiculous could accomplish all of these things. And then, of course, the original post uses that to justify why Darth Jar Jar is actually a Darth. I wanted to read this little excerpt from a 2019 Reddit post about Darth Jar Jar, comparing Jar Jar to Yoda. And I'm just going to read it and let you all make your own decisions. But, quote, "Yoda was almost Jar Jar Binks in The Empire Strikes Back. He was annoying, did nothing but mess with Luke, and was pretty much just visual comedy and gags until he revealed himself to be the master of the Force, and we were stunned that this green space goblin was apparently stronger and wiser than anyone else in the movie. Importantly, we learned this in the same movie he was introduced. Imagine if the reveal of Yoda being a Jedi Master was delayed until the Return of the Jedi. For 3 years, we'd have only known him to be this annoying thing that bogged down the movie and did nothing of any value except harass Luke and drag the plot." A little bit further down, "Jar Jar Minx was made to be the new Yoda, but instead as a Sith Lord instead of a Jedi Master. He followed some of the same beats as Yoda and seemed to be some parasite." That gets explicit, so I'm not going to quote.
Well, can I just say, I think that excerpt undermines the theory by pointing out that Yoda's arc is completely different from Jar Jar's in that he actually is revealed to be more than he initially seems. And so when they're saying, oh yeah, imagine if Yoda's arc had, you know, had him be this bumbling character for three movies and, or, you know, two movies, and then he was revealed as who he is. Yeah, that would be a completely different, you know, space war franchise. imagine if they actually revealed Jar Jar to be the thing that everybody is claiming he is, except they didn't, because he isn't.
Okay, the argument there is that Empire is the movie that George Lucas had the least involvement with. And so that if George Lucas had his druthers, Yoda wouldn't have been revealed until episode 6. Like, yes, it is pure speculation, but...
I've done some light Googling, and I wanted to see what Ahmed Best said about all of this. And over the years, he has chosen his words carefully where it comes to the Darth Jar Jar theory. But what he said at one point was, what I can say about this is, and I kind of said this on Twitter, there's a lot about it that's true. So take that for what you will.
You know what? I take that to mean that Ahmed Best is a legendarily funny person and that he enjoys yanking your chain, Haley. He's personally yanking your chain and you're falling for it. Because you want to believe.
He also said this, because of the backlash, and rightly so, Lucasfilm backed off from Jar Jar a lot. But a lot of the influence I put into Jar Jar mirrored a lot of what was already in the Star Wars universe. He added, was there an official Darth Jar Jar in the works? That's really a George Lucas question. I cannot answer that question. Mm-hmm. I will say this, it feels really good when the hidden meaning behind the work is seen, no matter how long it takes. So maybe Jar Jar was like an underling. Instead of being Darth Plagueis the Wise, he was a, you know, Darth Maul kind of person.
Also, Ahmed Best has said that there was a deleted scene from Revenge of the Sith where Palpatine kind of thanked Jar Jar for his rise to power. But this is why I think it's somewhat plausible, is that do I necessarily believe that Darth Jar Jar was pulling all the strings? No, but I think it's possible that Jar Jar was intended to be more, and, you know, not necessarily Snoke himself or Palpatine's real master, but maybe he was originally intended to be some kind of a bad guy. I think that the groundwork is laid.
Oh, totally possible. I mean, that's the thing about these rewrites, right? Is you know, the original script could have imagined Jar Jar being practically anything. And all you would have to do to get what we got is to change just enough story beats, just enough, you know, degrees in one direction or the other, that you have the movie we have now. I mean, that, you know, I totally believe that at some point George Lucas considered the idea of making him a villain, playing on that same idea that you don't suspect him because he's so innocuous and silly. But the idea that the plan was for Jar Jar to be the Sith behind the scenes, and that these, you know, that these stretches, to put it mildly, are evidence of that, is a little bit, let's just say, it reminds me of Charlie Day in It's Always Sunny in Philadelphia with the theory board full of string, and he's, you know, pointing at it and gesturing frantically. It's the classic meme. You've all seen it before. Yes. That's kind of what this feels like.
Well, it doesn't mean it's not real.
Mm-hmm.
here's my question, Eric. When you read the original Darth Jar Jar Reddit post, do you agree that that would have been a better arc for the trilogy if it had been carried out without interference or sort of changing Jar Jar's character arc?
No, because I think once you set him up as what he seems to be, you get too many people latching onto that, and a lot of them, by the way, kids who just find him funny, and it would not have gone over well if
you
tried
to. Do you think the kids would have gone to the dark side?
Yeah, I think you could have seen a rash of scheming, plotting, you know, perhaps machinations even. I mean, if you want to get into,
conniving.
You know, conniving, we could see some really, you know, dark stuff from America's, you know, from the 8 to, you know, 12-year-olds of America. in the late 90s, which was really just not a good time for that. So thankfully, George Lucas did the right thing and kept Jar Jar as he was, sacrificed Ahmed Best a little bit, but I think it was probably for the best for the youth of America. Let's talk about a slightly bigger theory. And it's hard to imagine anything bigger than Jar Jar Binks was a secret Sith Lord in terms of how far across the Star Wars galaxy that the implications of that span. But the other theory that instantly came to mind when we started talking about this episode, we said, okay, well, we're going to have Darth Jar Jar, right? And everybody agrees we're going to have that in this episode. And I'm sitting here saying the other thing we absolutely need to talk about is the bigger Luke hypothesis. Okay, so now I don't know how much folks know about this, but the theory goes that in the original trilogy, Luke Skywalker, the hero of the movie, well, there's actually two of him, is what this theory says. There's regular Luke Skywalker, and then there's the bigger Luke, who is taller than the original Luke, and you know, you don't see him very often. There's a nice article from The Guardian from 2021 summing up the description of Bigger Luke, and I'll just read this one line. Bigger Luke is a kind of shadowy doppelganger who allegedly pops into frame now and then and whose very existence hints at a deeper or perhaps larger reality. Now, I think they trace this back to about 2015, which, if I'm not mistaken, is also the time period from that Reddit post about Darth Jar Jar. So clearly something was in the water in 2015. It was a big time for Star Wars. We were all getting excited for that new movie. But yeah, folks, what do we think about Bigger Luke? There's a picture here on this Guardian article that I just love. It's a screenshot of, well, let's just say that there's a website called biggerluke.wiki.com. So it has its own wiki, and it's a picture of two silhouettes of Luke Skywalker, and one of them is indeed slightly taller than the other. Now, if you look at the evidence that they muster here, it's basically comparing photos of Mark Hamill standing next to other people that he's often photographed with, especially Harrison Ford and Carrie Fisher, and basically hinting at the idea that in some photos he looks taller compared to them than in other photos. Now, personally, I think this is the funniest thing I've ever seen. And I know that Mark Hamill has addressed this on Twitter before, slightly cryptically, if I'm not mistaken. So, Grace, do you, yes or no, Bigger Luke, real or fake?
I'm actually a proponent of the idea that the bigger Luke is the real Luke and that the smaller Luke is the fake one.
Grace, that's controversial.
That's a controversial variation on the bigger Luke hypothesis, because the idea is that Luke Prime, per the wiki, is the smaller one, and that the bigger Luke is the outlier. But I think it's really the reverse, and mostly just to be a little bit on the edge. But I do think it's just contrarian, exactly. But it is just an absolutely hilarious theory. And once again, like, who thinks of this, first of all? And then second of all, thank you for doing this work.
So my, first of all, slouching is a thing that happens. Secondly, camera angles can have some sort of influence on this. Sometimes surfaces are uneven also. I do have to specify that the bigger Luke is only like an inch or two taller than the other Luke.
Yeah, so well, they couldn't make it too obvious, Hayley. They couldn't want people to catch on.
It actually might be smaller than that. I think it said like 2 or 3 centimeters. Wait, I need to check.
By the way, I love that you, when it comes to bigger Luke, you are all camera angles are a thing, slouching is a thing. But when it comes to Darth Jar Jar, you're like, no, this Gungan is a Sith Lord. I will not hear any objections.
Okay, for the record, Darth Jar Jar is completely true. And secondly,
okay,
I
great,
have
well argued, very convincing, compelling argument there. Very, you've really mustered some of the strongest
I've
facts imaginable.
I've checked the internet,
there.
And it says Big Luke is about 2 to 3 centimeters taller than the other one, which means there's, like, that's not a big difference. But I do like the concept for what it could introduce to the Star Wars universe. I noticed there's not really a coherent reason that there would be a bigger Luke. I, like plot-wise, I saw that there's two different explanations, which is there's a Mark Hamill doppelganger that they used, and it's not actually a plot device. It's just there's a secret look-alike that they used for no real reason. Maybe Mark was having an off day. Or it is a plot device in which this bigger Luke is from a different, like a parallel universe. The theory that I liked was that bigger Luke failed to kill the Death Star or to save the rebellion, and bigger Luke, just racked with guilt, has found a way into this other timeline, this other parallel universe, to assist the smaller Luke in helping bring down the Empire. I like the idea. I like it, if only because it opens up a lot of storytelling possibilities. But I do not find it as compelling as Darth Jar Jar.
I mean, yeah. Grace, let me ask you this.
Yeah.
There's a character in A New Hope named Biggs Darklighter.
Yes.
Could they possibly have done that except to reference the idea that actually you should be thinking about character as heights? I mean, is that even a plausible argument?
Here's why no. Because Biggs is spelled with two G's. And as we all know, the word big is spelled with one G. So that's
maybe
just
not in Star Wars. I mean, maybe not.
Coincidence. That's just a fun little coincidence for Biggs Darklighter and his hilarious mustache.
So here's my question. Did anybody find the clip of Lando? So part of the evidence for bigger Luke is that Lando supposedly notices that Luke is 2 to 3 centimeters larger in one scene, and he gives him a questioning look. And I'm trying to find the clip. I'm curious if anyone has watched it. I think it's in Empire.
It's on the wiki dot, the biggerluke.wiki.com, which, folks, I highly recommend, even if you think that this theory sounds ridiculous. Go check this out. They really marshal some really compelling evidence here as compared to the Darth Jar Jar thing with the 74 references to him flailing his arms around as a supposed form of martial arts. This is some compelling stuff here. They've got photos. They've got, like, visual analysis with, like, a little blue bar that is, like,
rectangle-like. Visual analysis of Darth Jar Jar. There's plenty of visual analysis of Darth Jar Jar.
So, Eric, you're convinced by Bigger Luke?
I don't want to, I've got a reputation to maintain, so I don't want to, like, be too strongly in favor. I can't afford to go out on a limb for something that's still controversial in mainstream society. I'm just saying we don't have all the answers to all the questions yet, and it's not a time to just preclude any possibilities where we haven't ruled everything out. I'm just saying we should question our reality. We should question everything around us. The scientists don't have an explanation for this. They haven't been able to explain this. One day they say that there is no bigger Luke. Then the next day, you know, Tony Fauci says actually there is a bigger Luke. So clearly there's a lot of information, and I'm not really sure where to go for the smartest and most accurate information, but this is really compelling to me.
You have to do your own research.
Oh, I believe me, I'm doing my own research here, and I don't think they're all the same height. I'm sorry. You look at them, you compare them, they're standing there, and yes, camera angles, you know, could have been, you know, different in one shot versus another, but this all happened a long time ago in a galaxy far, far away. We don't know what kind of camera technology was even available that far back, so we can't necessarily explain it away with that. I'm just saying, if you read into this, there's some really fascinating stuff here. I highly recommend, you know, going on Facebook and just reading what these unemployed bloggers have to say about this topic. You know, you'll really get some great, accurate information. And don't listen to the scientists when they tell you that this has all been clinically disproven and it's not true. You know, they're not the experts in everything, okay? You know, you have to make the decision that's best for you and best for your kids.
This is also a satire podcast, apparently.
Yes, that's right. Okay, so Bigger Luke, listen, there's a lot there. Do your own research. We don't have to get into it. But one of my personal favorite theories, and this has absolutely never been disproven, and I think there's strong evidence for it, is that R2-D2, whenever he's speaking, is actually swearing, that he is the most foul-mouthed character in Star Wars, and that is why all of his lines have to be bleeped. And you never actually get to hear him speak because it's all censored. Can I get you to weigh in on this?
I'm not into that, but there is, I guess, a later version of that with Chopper.
Yes.
Who is 100% swearing like a sailor with every line.
I was going to say exactly that. Like, R2-D2, I think he occasionally swears. There are definitely moments where, you know, he's cussing a little bit. You can tell he's frustrated. But I don't think it infuses his vocabulary in the same way that when you watch Chopper from Rebels, like, every sentence includes a swear word. You can just tell it is just imbued in his physicality that Chopper is cursing everyone and everything out at any given moment. So I love this theory, but I don't think that it's in character for R2-D2 to constantly be cursing. I think he's occasionally cursing. I do think it's in character for Chopper to be constantly cursing.
Interesting. So you think R2 is just too much of a cherubic angel to be, you know, that foul mouth?
I think he curses. You know, he gets frustrated. We see him get annoyed. I'm not saying that he doesn't curse. I just think that I don't think every single one of his lines is explicit.
Okay, name one line that you don't think was explicit. You can't. Checkmate.
I do have a question. I'm sure you have both seen it. There's this deleted scene from Revenge of the Sith where Obi-Wan and Anakin are in the elevator on the ship, and like R2 is trying to get them to go to where they need to go to save Palpatine, and Anakin speaks R2-D2's language.
I have seen that. Yeah.
So I'm curious, Eric, if you align with this theory, if you think that Anakin in that deleted scene was cursing and not actually, and was being bleeped out and not actually communicating in the way that R2 communicates.
I mean, it was a stressful situation. I could certainly see him cursing in that moment. We don't really see him curse a lot, but the pressure could have been getting to him. So I'm not going to rule it out. I don't think it's inconsistent with the theory. It's also possible that he doesn't know R2-D2's language and that he's just mimicking the sound that R2-D2 makes to his ears, because maybe he's hearing the bleeps.
Bleep himself out?
Either he bleeps himself out, or just the Force is bleeping him out for Anakin. Again, we don't know for sure. We can't disprove. We can't clinically
disprove
any of this.
R2's language is so vile that the Force itself is bleeping him out.
Keep in mind, we've seen R2-D2 do some pretty dark things. I mean, even in that movie, like 5 minutes earlier, we see R2, or maybe even later, we see him light a pair of super battle droids on fire as they beg for their lives. And that's how he dispatches with them in order to get away to safety. I mean, this is a psychotic droid, and he will do whatever it takes. There were ways. I feel like R2-D2 could have figured out ways to humanely disable those droids if he were just trying to get away.
He was in a hurry.
Yeah.
Here's my other question about this theory, Eric. Is R2 like doing Star Wars swears, or is this like, for instance, Chopper is 100% swearing in our language?
Kark, Criff. Oh yeah, Chopper for sure is saying some things that would make a sailor blush. I don't deny that Chopper is more obscene than R2. I'm not denying that. I think that's for sure true. You can just tell from the tone of his voice. R2 is a little bit more of a kind of a plucky, you know, foul mouth droid. Like he's a little bit more endearing. So you're like, oh, R2. But it's not kind of this like stern, reproachful, you know, R2, go wash your mouth out with oil. You know, it's not like that. But I do think he's cursing a lot. And I also think if you think about the situations that he's in, I would be cursing too. I mean, he has to go through some tough stuff. Like, that is not the life of a person who is happy-go-lucky. You know, everybody, you know, people like us, we have the luxury of, you know, speaking in a nice, polite manner to our fellow human beings around us, because, you know, we ultimately live pretty good lives. R2-D2, no, not so much. That guy has seen some stuff, and
The theory not that every line is being bleeped, because every line is cursing?
Yeah, I mean, I don't think he...
But sometimes he's not in battle or being in a stressful
situation. But he's still
situation.
Grizzled. He's still bearing the weight of the centuries, if not decades, of difficulties, despair, suffering, especially by the time the original trilogy, he's really seen some stuff. And we don't necessarily know what he had to face.
He had his memory wiped, so...
But the nature of the Galactic Civil War is that even after the wipe, he starts accruing even more traumatic memories. It's not just about Order 66 and all that. It's about everything that happened. I mean, for God's sake, the Tantive IV. I mean, he is there as Darth Vader. I mean, he escapes right afterwards, but he's present as the stormtroopers are slaughtering these rebel troopers and might even hear Darth Vader choke the life out of Captain Antilles. I mean, that is not something that you just walk away from.
Okay, so here's my new theory, is that I'm going to split the difference and say, sure, he's cursing all the time, but it is just Star Wars curses. It's just him saying Dank Ferrick over and over again.
Dank Carabast.
Or Carabast Criff. Oh, we're in deep poo-doo now.
Haley, does that make it better for you?
No, because then, like, the Force itself would not be censoring him, because other people say those things in Star Wars.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I think the idea is that they just don't, they're not as, what's the word I'm looking for? They're not as voluble when it, like, they don't curse as much. Like, R2 is a cursing machine. So, like, the Force is not going to bleep every single curse word that every single person says. But when the Force picks up on a particular character being kind of a potty mouth, they put a filter, a Force filter, on that character. So yeah, other people can say Dank Ferrick or whatever, but like, I think the idea is that the Force is watching R2. That's true. I mean, I'm not saying I believe it. Folks, I don't want to get people on the internet tagging me as, you know, an R2-D2 swear word guy. I'm just saying, do your own research.
And yet you are like, oh, but Darth Jar Jar is unrealistic.
Oh, it's completely unrealistic. No, it's
no,
the stupidest thing
do
ever.
Do your own research on Darth Jar Jar, everyone.
Okay, I did my own research on him. And I gotta say, if you look at some of these clips, you try to tell me that this is Jar Jar Binks doing wushu? No, he's just flailing his arms around because he's a nincompoop. All right, that's the end of it.
He dodged a laser bullet.
One laser bullet. Wow. I can't think of anybody else who's ever done that and not been
yeah,
a Sith Lord.
Yeah, they're all Jedi.
I feel like Padme's dodged a bullet or two in her time. Unless that's the new theory, that Padme Amidala is a secret Sith Lord.
You know, everything did go sideways when she showed up.
Hmm. Well, we'll have to explore that in a future episode. Can I ask you two about another theory that I love, and I actually stumbled across this one while doing research for this episode. I did not know about this theory before we settled down to do this episode. Let me just read it to you. When Luke got attacked by the Sand People in episode 4, and I'm sorry for that language, folks, I'm just quoting here, he went into a coma, and everything from then on is simply him dreaming of the adventures he wished he had. Can I get some reaction to that? Because personally, I think it's kind of a cop-out, because then it leaves you to think that he's actually not this great character with this great arc of, you know, struggle and temptation and, you know, sacrifice and maturity. I think it actually undercuts Luke's arc in a really damning way. But what do you think? Is it compelling to you to imagine that this is all just a dream?
Yes, the idea that this is all a fiction does indeed undercut the arc, because then it would not be an arc at all.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying.
Maybe Luke was in purgatory.
Well, ooh. What would he have done by this point to end up in purgatory?
He was mean to his aunt and uncle. They treated him really well, and he was just a disrespectful teenager wanting to go to Tashi Station instead of taking care of the farm.
I personally do not like the theory, the dream
no,
theory.
Me neither.
Mainly because I also don't like the modern idea that all of life is just a simulation and nothing matters and we aren't real. Mm-hmm. And this has the same vibe to me. And it's also just lazy storytelling.
I agree. That's why I don't like it. It's lazy.
Wasn't there a famous show from, like, I don't know, the, like, this is a wide time window, but this is my memory of it, is like some show from sometime between like the 70s and the 2000s, like not like a recent show, but not like one of the first TV shows ever, where like an entire season was revealed to be somebody's dream. And that was like the controversial, like, cliffhanger
ending.
Ooh,
I actually know this. Okay. This may not be what you're talking about, but the comedian Bob Newhart, famous in the second half of the 20th century, had two TV shows, two sitcoms. And in the first sitcom, he is a therapist. That was the Bob Newhart show. In the second sitcom, called Newhart, he owned an inn in Vermont. And both shows were really, really popular, had a bunch of seasons. But in the second sitcom, in the series finale, at the very end, he wakes up in bed with his TV wife from the first sitcom and is like, whoa, I just had the weirdest dream. And I mean, people went bananas because this was back in the day when, you know, everyone watched the same TV show. And so everyone had seen the first Bob Newhart show, and now they were watching the second one, and then to have it revealed that this whole series was just a dream, like, whoa. So I don't know if that's explicitly what you're talking about, but that is a very famous example of it.
I think that is what I was thinking about. And good on you, Grace, for just knowing the absolute most random, useless information. But in this case, it really paid off.
Yep. So completely off topic. But when I was 8 years old, I got the autobiography of Bob Newhart. I don't know why, but I loved it. I read it over and over and over again. Again, I had never seen Newhart or the Bob Newhart show. I'd never seen anything with Bob Newhart, knew nothing about him, but I really loved his autobiography. And that is why I have this random font of knowledge about Bob Newhart.
Yeah, folks, I just want to say, for anybody out there who is a proponent of the Darth Jar Jar theory and has been frustrated with me for kind of downplaying and deriding it, I just want to point out, you know, consider the type of person who is attracted to the Darth Jar Jar theory. This is a person who reads the autobiography of a comedian whose work she's completely unfamiliar with at a tender young age and retains probably none of her algebra class lessons from high school.
Nope.
But certainly this fact, this is definitely going to be useful. So again, just think about the kind of person you want to be. Do you want to be this kind of person? Do you not want to be this kind of person? Again, do your own research. I leave it up to you to make that decision.
So you want to be the kind of person, an avid reader, who has information in their head that is useful in conversations with people. And
conversation singular. Sorry, conversation singular. And it's this conversation. This one conversation.
I have had actually multiple conversations about Bob Newhart and specifically that fact.
Prove it. So, yeah. Can you prove it?
I actually could if I called over my boyfriend, but he's playing video games.
Okay, sure. Boyfriend, yeah, good story.
But
good story.
I was going to say, I haven't used trigonometry recently. I have used that fact about Bob Newhart. So, you know, I'm winning over here.
Mm-hmm. But is she winning, folks? Is she winning? all right, let's talk about a theory that actually surfaced in the sequel trilogy. The sequel trilogy, really just a font of opportunities to start telling stories and then not tell the rest of them at all, and sometimes undermined what was already told about those theories, about those stories, rather. And one of them that we have here in our show notes is the idea that Snoke is the Jedi Padawan from Revenge of the Sith, who says, and I'm going to do my best impression here, "Master Skywalker, there are too many of them. What are we going to do?" And is then just brutally murdered by Anakin Skywalker, who has become Darth Vader by this point. I don't know which one of you put this in here, but can whoever you are please speak up? Because Anakin very clearly killed this child.
It was me. And for the record, Snoke has a big scar on his head, and that could easily have been made with a lightsaber. A child accidentally left alive by Darth Vader at that point. I 100% believe it, and this also comes from the same time period in which we were excited for The Force Awakens, and I was really into Darth Jar Jar, and this one popped up, and it is true. I looked at photographic evidence, and you look at the scar, and that is not a minor wound. And Snoke is just like, he's very traumatized, obviously. He doesn't really look like a mature person. It's like almost as if he didn't like fully mature after that, or he was like in stasis somehow. He's like the child, 100%. That's just a fact, along with Darth Jar Jar.
So the theory rests on the idea that the only thing that could possibly explain that gash on Snoke's forehead is a lightsaber blade specifically wielded by the newly christened Darth Vader, specifically at the moment of Order 66.
Y'all need to... Okay, first of all, pull up the photo. Pull it...
All right, I'm pulling it up right now.
Type, all you have to type in is Snoke child, because this is such a widespread theory.
And by the way, keep your safe search on, folks.
It is the same person. It is the youngling.
I'm sorry to be giggling my way through this whole segment.
It's pretty dark.
I do take this very seriously. I mean, I could see it because, you know, he firsthand saw the power of the Sith. And being an impressionable child, he realized, you know, that he wanted that power so that he would never be hurt that way, scarred in the face that way again. So he in turn became a powerful Sith Lord. Like, I see it. I see the emotional resonance behind it.
I don't know. I'm looking at this photo. I don't see it. I don't see it. I mean, they have it split screened where they've actually mirror image flipped the photo of the kid so that he's facing in the same direction as Snoke, which is to say that he's looking to, like, from your perspective as the viewer, he's looking off to the left, which is like they have this freeze frame with Snoke doing the same thing. And Snoke's mouth is like slightly open and like the boy's mouth is like slightly more open because he's in the middle of talking. And like, is that the similarity that like the facial structure is like momentarily the same? Like their eyes don't look the same. His forehead, first of all, his forehead is much smaller. So if the idea is that he was like killed and then his head stayed the same, but just had that gash on it, like Snoke's head is much bigger. I don't know. Like,
but Snoke is bald. How can you truly measure the size of the forehead when this kid has bangs?
Hair is short enough that we can say that there's not too much more of like his head above it.
I disagree. Plus, you need to look. There's this photo I'm looking at right now of Snoke and the child slowly merged into the same person.
Oh my god.
And they have like the same features. Their eyes are like set apart the same distance.
What? I'm sorry. What? No, no.
Their facial features are the same. They have the same nose, except like allowing for the painful, you know, having been gashed with a lightsaber side effects.
But the gash doesn't even go down to his nose.
No, his face is, there's,
Listen, folks, do your own research. You know, just look, type in Snoke child in your own Google machine. Come to your own conclusions. Don't let Eric or any of us taint your way of thinking. This is up to you, for you to determine. So, you know, just take everything with a grain of salt and decide on your own, because you can't trust anyone except what the internet says.
That's right. The only source you can trust is the internet. And if you're paranoid, it doesn't mean they're not coming to get you. Okay, let's talk about not so much a singular dumb theory as a celestial body around which all kinds of dumb theories orbit, as if magnetically compelled to circle the subject forever, and that is Rey's parentage. This was obviously the defining topic of conversation for Star Wars fans between did we know who Rey was in 2015 or 2014? Yeah. Or had they just said Daisy Ridley was cast? Okay, 2014 to 2019. And for some folks who choose to believe that the rise of Skywalker never happened, this continues to be a topic to this day. Obviously, you know, there's a ton of theories out there about who Rey's parents could have been before the question was definitively answered. Grace, what was your favorite theory for who Rey's parents were?
So if we are talking about contemporarily, when the movies were coming out circa 2015, before The Last Jedi, after The Force Awakens, I really was a fan of the Rey Skywalker theory. I thought that she could have been a daughter of Luke Skywalker. I thought it was more plausible than some of the other theories. That was probably what I believed most at the time. If we are talking about now, in a post-Rise of Skywalker world, where literally anything would be preferable to Rey Palpatine, my personal theory that you found, Eric, is that Rey is the daughter. I can't even get this out. Rey is the daughter, the product of an affair between Dexter Jetster and Padme. I think that's incredible. It's beautiful, flawless. I have no notes. Like, you don't even need to look at the silly justification that the person who made this theory has, because it's irrelevant. What matters here is the idea of Dexter Jetster and Padme having an affair and Rey being born of that. So that's my answer.
I don't like knowing that concept. For the record, it is known to listeners of this show that I am a firm proponent of Rey Kenobi, mainly because she spends time on a desert planet. She also has a British accent. I think that's very compelling evidence that Obi-Wan was her father, potentially with his Mandalorian soulmate. I like the idea. I think that's it would have been good.
As we all know, accents are inherited.
That's how it happens. The experts will tell you not to believe.
Do your own research, folks.
Do your own research. Accents are genetic. They've isolated the genes that actually pass it on.
By the way, Haley, if you don't like the idea of Rey Jetster, you're really not going to like the title of this Quora.com post that I found, which is,
oh no,
Star Wars 8, : is Dexter Jetster a romantic interest for Rey?
That bothers me.
To which someone responds, I'm sure there's some fan fiction out there for you if that's something you want to see. So clearly, the internet doing its thing. I have to say, two of my favorites are, one, Captain Phasma, 2, Mon Mothma, and there is a post that rounds up the Rey parentage theories. And for both of them, essentially what it says is, Rey's mom is probably a character we've already met, and there are only 3 women in Star Wars, so it's got to be one of them. And personally, I'm going to go with Mon Mothma, because I think that diplomatic poise is also a genetic trait that is inherited, and we know that Rey is very good at kind of being that stoic individual like Mon Mothma was. So
wait, I have to interrupt here, because this article that you linked to from Goliath.com, it doesn't say the year, but going over the theories of Rey's parentage, Rey is Palpatine's granddaughter.
Oh, this, yes, please read this. I tweeted about this. I love this so much. Just read like as much of this as you want.
Quote, this is easily one of the most downright ridiculous theories out there, but it would admittedly be pretty cool if it's true. Unfortunately, wouldn't it be cool if Rey was the granddaughter of Emperor Palpatine is essentially the entire basis for this argument, which makes it incredibly flimsy to say the least.
Like, you don't say. There's also a part of that section where it says, the problem is that none of this really makes any sense. To which I say, yes, well said. So I think we've all established that Rey's parents are definitely not the characters that we are shown in The Rise of Skywalker. There's definitely a real answer out there. If you just look for it, you'll find it. Don't believe what J.J. Abrams told you. Do your own research. Don't listen to the man. All right, well, thank you everybody for listening to this episode. We hope you enjoyed our conversation about some of our favorite theories out there. And again, we urge you to just never trust what anybody in a position of authority tells you when it comes to Star Wars. When it comes to everything else, you should definitely listen to them because they know what they're talking about. When it comes to Star Wars, do your own research. In the meantime, if you want to share your thoughts with us about this episode or suggest topics for our future shows, please email us at hofftakes@gmail.com. You can also find us on Twitter at hofftakes. I'm at Eric Geller on Twitter. Grace is at Grace_Seegers. Haley is at Birdnator. Haley made our incredible logo and banner art. I edited this episode, and I also put together our music, which, as always, want to point out, for legal reasons, all Star Wars themes and sound effects are the intellectual property of Lucasfilm. You can find a complete archive of past episodes on our website, and that's hofftakes.wordpress.com. If you like the show, we encourage you to share it with a friend. You can do that by finding Hoff Takes on all the major podcast platforms. That includes Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Spotify, and Stitcher. We will see you next time. May the Force be with you.